Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we are the Love Letter Squad here with you again this week for a wonderful journey into a story and a love letter. But before we start, I want to tell you all about something that was in the New York Times recently. There was, and maybe some of you saw it, it is so worth getting. You can find it on Google, I am sure. It was an article about the letters that were kept by Donna Reed, the actress who was apparently, she was gorgeous, and known, I think, best as
The Donna Reed Show was her television show, but this happened before that, during the war.
I was just bringing the younger people up to date.
But the younger people.
Yes, before that, she was an actress, I mean, a serious movie actress, and quite a pinup girl, very, very beautiful, and the GIs wrote to her and asked if they could have a picture of her, and one of them, it starts out by saying, "We don't ever see women. We don't get to see women here. Do you think you could send us a picture?" They were so lonely and so deprived. She kept every one of those letters, and they were just found. Larry Roeder, who's a journalist for the New York Times, wrote a wonderful article on these letters and on that era. And he said, I talked to him, he said they had such historical value. They were historical documents, and they were such expressions of human feeling at that time. They were ordinary people in extraordinary situations looking for a way to stay connected. And he said, Larry Roeder said, reading these letters, he was struck by the language that was used. They spoke to each other differently in that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the handwriting was different. Now, we talk about handwriting a lot. It is king in love letters, I think. And it says something generations later. So if you have a chance to find this Larry Roeder article, you might want to. It's just delicious. And he's a war correspondent. He's a journalist who, and this was so connected to World War II, so it certainly fell into his hands. So now, because we're talking about letters found, we're going to go to our guest today, Melissa Stacy, of Feeling Organized. And why don't you just tell us what that is, for
Thank
starters.
You. I started my company 3 years ago, and I am a professional organizer who focuses a lot on office organization as well as closet organization, but I help clients basically go through the clutter and then set up systems that will work well for them so that they can maintain the organization over time.
Do they maintain them?
I've never had a complaint yet.
So, but that also means you haven't been called back, so you know they're doing their job?
Every once in a while, just for a little, like, touch-ups, but they don't ever get back to the point where they were before.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with people who mean well, not, like, psychopathic problems
no.
in that area.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's that, too. Okay, why don't you just start and talk about you? About your parents and who they are and how you grew up and what's behind you.
What's behind me? I have a very big family, actually. And I just got back from where I basically grew up. Both my parents grew up in Marblehead, Massachusetts. They knew each other growing up, dated each other's friends, and they both were born and raised there. So they call it home. My grandparents, both sides of my grandparents are out there. My mother has five sisters. She's a big Irish family. And my dad had two brothers who passed away about 10 years, maybe 8 years ago now, and an older sister as well. So I have a younger brother. We're actually both adopted when we were babies. But we grew up around a very large family. And although we never lived in Marblehead, Massachusetts, we moved around a lot. It's both where we call home.
Mm-hmm. Now, why is that where you call home?
Well, because every summer, since I was 3 years old, I would spend every summer on my own with my grandparents out there.
Oh.
And also every Christmas as well. So, I still do that. I was just back home a couple days ago. So it's something that was stable for me. It was the one place that I could always say was going to be stable and was an actual home, because we did move around a lot. And my parents, although they're very stable, it's where they called home as well. In fact, they just moved back. They just bought a new house in Marblehead, Massachusetts, and they'll be closing on that at the end of this month. So they're going to be back home again as well. So
you really have a pivotal point in your life.
I do.
It's nice.
It's, you know, it's, I remember my summers very well. I remember spending Christmases out there very well. You know, my entire family is there. I have
what did you do
friends.
Out there?
Oh, geez, what didn't I do? It was right on the coast. It's a little cute historical town just north of Boston. And I'd go to sailing camp out on Children's Island. My grandfather was big into refinishing furniture and old clocks and painting. And
it's
so
a hobby?
We would go to the yard. Yeah, absolutely. He retired, but they say never really retired because he was always busy anyway. So we go to yard sales. I would go roller skating around through the town, riding my bike. The beaches were very close to me, so I could go down to the beaches. And just spent a lot of time with my family and cousins. You know, I have a lot of cousins, so.
And you're all fairly close?
We are, yes. We're very close. Especially on my dad's side, because that's the grandparents that I would stay with during the summer. Mm-hmm. So I am close to my mother's side as well, but the ones that are on my dad's side were a little bit closer in age to me, so.
And your brother, where does he live?
My brother is actually in downtown Chicago now. Oh. So he's living there and loving it. He loves the city life. So it's good for him. It's good for him to be in a city.
Yeah. So how did you move over to this company that you started 3 years ago? What did you do before then?
Well, I was actually a technical recruiter before that. And being in technical recruiting, you have to be very well organized. And before that, I was in social work. I worked for Children's Home Society of California doing, we basically funded childcare for low-income families. So you have to be really organized to be doing both of those things. And it was always something that I enjoyed doing. I would do it for family and friends. And one day one of my friends said to me, you know, I'm going to pay you for this. So I started really looking into the National Association for Professional Organizers and taking workshops. There is. Yep. NAPO. NAPO.net.
That must be something fairly new.
No, it's actually been around for quite some time. There's thousands of organizers.
It was quite some time.
I can't even remember. Maybe 20 years. Maybe. Oh. Yeah. So it's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. And I could be misquoting that. So.
Okay.
So I started looking into it, and I started taking workshops, and I thought, okay, you know, I'm going to do it part-time. I'm going to give myself a year and do it part-time. And within 3 months, I'd quit my job and was doing it full-time, and have been doing it full-time ever since. And thankfully, knock on wood,
yes.
Going very well. So.
Because the world needs you.
I was surprised. There's a lot of unorganized people in this world.
Well, there are a lot of unorganized people in this world. But the interesting thing is when there are unorganized people in this world who know they need help.
Right.
I think a lot of people don't know they're...
Well,
I don't
want to
use the flop word, but, you know, yes. Or they really don't know it. They
right.
don't see what they're sitting in.
Right, right.
Uh-huh.
Or how much time it takes to be disorganized.
That's the problem, yeah. And, I did a seminar yesterday, actually, with Kathleen Ronald in Speaktacular, and I was talking about the 13 tips to an insanity-free office zone. And it really was talking about organizing tips and just some of the basics, you know.
Can
and
you
how
give
it,
us a couple without?
Sure, well, sure. Well, first of all, it's going to take
your
time
hand.
And money. But yeah. One of the things I like to say is when you have mail, instead of just dropping your mail on your desk, make sure that you go over to the recycling bin, open your mail over the recycling bin, get rid of all the junk stuff immediately, shred the stuff that you don't want other people to get your hands on, and then just put it in a small little bin to pay your bills so that the only thing that actually goes on your desk are the couple pieces of paper that you really need.
Yes, I just was having, I was telling Teresa, I was having this conversation with my husband, whose desk is filled with envelopes that say, get this, occupant. And I'm saying, honey, it's not, well, I want to see what's in it. It's not for you.
No.
It's an occupant or resident.
Yeah.
We were
or
married.
Or neighbor.
Yes, married 3 years. He's still getting letters from the fixing, matchmaking places.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So what you're doing is really just wonderful.
Thank you. I really enjoy it.
And
I like
people
helping
know that
people.
They need to come to you. That's
they do.
A good thing.
They do. And I always tell people, you have to be ready for it. You don't call me unless you're ready for it. Because if you're not ready, then you're wasting your money.
Or they're resistant.
Exactly. And some people still are. And that's mm-hmm. okay.
Okay. So
it
that's
takes a little while.
Okay. So tell us more about your...
The love letter that I wrote?
Yeah. Well, about your grandparents, if you would. What kind of people were they? What were they like? What did you love best?
Just about everything with them. My grandfather, as I said, he had a lot of hobbies. And so we spent a lot of time together doing, woodworking. He had a huge shop. He owned a contracting company for many years that my cousin has recently taken over.
You want to tell us their names?
Which
your
one? Oh, my grandparents? Yeah, his name was Donald Stacy. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother's name was Mary Stacy. Okay. We all called her Mimi. In fact, everyone in Marblehead called her Mimi. And all of my friends that I grew up with called her Mimi. So they were caring, generous, and probably the most accepting people that I've ever known.
Okay, that's kind of what I'm wondering and getting to. Like, what is it about them that has you so in love with them?
They were everyone that meets them was in love with them. I think that's, you know, that was the big thing, is you meet them and you just have this instant connection that you know that no matter what you do and what you say, they're not going to judge you.
Mm-hmm.
And just a lot of fun, easy to be around, and loved their family more than anything in this world, you know. And we were all lucky to know them for as long as we did. You know, my grandfather passed away 10 years ago. Which was really hard on the family. Thankfully, my grandmother survived another almost 10 years.
Was she heartbroken, though, without him?
She was. You know, it was really hard for her because she grew up in the Depression. She didn't have a lot during the Depression. She married my grandfather at a very young age, you know, 20, 21. They had four children. We lost she had twins that were in between my mom, my aunt and my dad. She lost one of the twins when he was very young. He had a brain aneurysm. Mm-hmm. So she lost him first, and then she lost my grandfather, and then she lost the other twins. So in a short amount of time, she lost three people that were very, very close to her. But she was also the strongest person I know. You know, she kept them all alive. She would talk to us about them and who they were and all the great things that they did. So she really kept them alive inside herself as well as with the rest of the family. But yes, she was heartbroken, and I know she just passed away in January, and I know she's in a better place. She's happy to be with them again. As you know, as hard as for the rest of us to lose them, she's where she needs to be now.
Yes, death can be a terrible plan for the living.
It really is, you know. And you know, I think one of the hardest things for all of us was when we knew she wasn't doing well at Christmas, and so we all had one more really big Christmas with her. When she did pass away in January, even she was almost 91 years old. She lived a very full life, but it didn't make it any easier. But I realized something. It was very hard for me. It was very hard for all of us. And I realized something. It almost felt like I was losing my grandfather again. It was like losing both of them at the same time, because she kept my grandfather so alive.
How just interesting.
And so to go through it, it was almost like going through it again. It was really interesting. It was really like losing my grandfather all over again. So
because he was living inside
her. He really was. You could feel, and I honestly, you know, people always say, coming from an old historical town, you know about the ghosts and the spirits and everything else, because the town's over 350 years old. But so you could really feel him in the house, even, you know, even when you'd go into their house, which my dad grew up in. They lived in that house for 63 years. So, you know, you could feel him all around you, and you could feel his presence. Not only because she kept him alive, but everybody kept him alive. We talked about them a lot. And she had a lot of really great memories about him. She called him the old boy.
I'm listening to you. Do you feel now that you have the joy of taking on that task of keeping them alive?
You know, I think, you know, it's funny because when I was just home, I was actually going through my grandparents' house and getting rid of the things that were, you know, no longer needed, and really setting aside things for the family to take. And I do think it's up to all of us, but I think my dad and my mom have actually taken on that role.
Okay.
It was my dad's parents. And it's interesting because you can hear the stories that they're telling the stories now. And, you know, my aunt and uncle are really telling the stories now. So while I think it's all of our responsibility, I think they've taken their role very seriously.
So that down the generation, each one will take that responsibility
exactly.
for keeping the whole family here.
Yep.
Okay.
And we're all still very close, you know. I was just out there. One of my cousins is getting married, you know, in a couple weekends. So, I think the memory of them will keep us all close as well.
Is anyone writing down these stories?
I actually tape recorded my grandmother the last couple of years, that when I would go out for Christmas and for summer. So I have some of her stories recorded. I tend to be the recorder of stories and pictures, so I've kind of taken on that role. But, you know, one of my cousins, she's also, her name is Stacy, and she has, and it's not Stacy.
Oh,
Stacy Haven.
Okay. I figured it was something else.
Yeah, yes. She was named after our last name. So she spent a lot of time with my grandmother in the last couple years that she was alive, taking care of her really on a kind of day-to-day basis.
Because there are places you can take all that information.
Exactly.
yeah.
and archiving it. And I found some great information. I love photography and I love, you know, family history. And my grandfather, I didn't even know he had done this, but I found a big folder of some family history that he had put together, you know, the tree and really some really deep history into our family, which I'm really excited to kind of
like
get
a genealogical family tree.
Yep, mm-hmm. absolutely. What the Stacy name means, that sort of
thing. Oh, good.
Nice. Now I see that you've brought something you've written. Now, when did you write that? Because
I actually wrote this. It's a poem.
Obviously part of your history also.
It is. It's a very big part of my history. And it's actually, I wrote it 16 years ago, so I was 20 years old, and it was Christmas time, and I really wanted, at the time, I think about it now, and I think, I don't know why I wrote it. I think now what I wanted to do was really honor my grandparents and what an important role they played in my life, and also the town of Marblehead. It is, you know, it was something that I still go back, and it's a very magical place for me. And so it was to honor my grandparents, the town, and really the family that I love so much. So I wrote it when I was 20, right before Christmas, and I got up at the Christmas dinner table and read it to everyone. And
when you were 20?
Yeah, when I was 20 years old, and they cried.
I'm sure. You know, before you read it to us?
Yes.
I just want to say, Teresa, Melissa has already just in normal conversation touched on two things that we talk about that is so important in love letters. The first thing you did, most people don't say this, what was your goal?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big, big thing in writing a love letter. What is your goal? What is it you want to do? Because it keeps you able to do it. And the other thing is you did this 20 years ago. You did it when they were young.
Right.
So you really said what you felt while you still had the chance for them to know it.
It was very important to me. And it was interesting because it's something that I read at my, which was very difficult in January. I actually read it at my grandmother's funeral.
You want to read it to us now?
Sure. Okay. It's called Never Far From the Heart. There is a place far from my eyes to see where memories overcome me, where the ocean takes me back to childhood days of laughter and love. There is a place where soft white sails caress the blue horizon in the cool summer breeze, where salty waves lap at my feet as the sun warms my face. There is a place where the cold winter wind whips at my hair and turns my cheeks pink, where ponds freeze over and children play all bundled in warmth. There is a place where the scent of hollyhocks is like a sweet perfume that no one can quite place, where people actually stop to smell the flowers and enjoy the history that this town holds. There is a place where deep below the earth, soldiers lie, soldiers who died for freedom, who may have never heard the Liberty Bell ring, where time is kept sacred and history is preserved. There is a place where not only history is important or beauty kept within my memories, but where life was built and my dreams created, where family resides and welcomes me until the sunset of the Massachusetts sky. There is a place where I can't remember a time when life was dull or when I did not feel loved, where the strength of family prevailed and drew me to the coast at the coming of summer. There is a place where every Saturday night meant fried shrimp and french fries, where the end of the evening brought walks along the harbor and ice cream sundaes to die for. There is a place where the streets call my name, where memories flow back to me of roller skating through the town or riding my bike across the neck, where I can walk down to the beach to collect crabs and starfish or spend an afternoon out on the boat with Aunt Rita and Uncle Rents. There is a place where my heart longs to be, where the cool air makes me want to run and let myself be free. A place where the sound of Mimi in the kitchen satisfies me, where the taste of tuna fish and iced tea has never tasted so good. There is a place where memories of deserted islands and ash-fallen houses enrapture me, where stories of imprisoned ladies remind me of abandoned forts left from the war, and each time I see a widow's walk, I think of myself one day standing, waiting for the return of the one I love. There is a place where I have been spoiled by Gramps and his candy bars, or the slip of a $20 bill and the remark, "Don't spend it all in one place." A place where family gathers each Christmas to laugh and enjoy the time we have together, and as my family grows, so do my memories. So spoiled I may be, spoiled with love and generosity, with honesty and encouragement to be all that I can be, where dreams begin and then come true, where there are people who I've loved and lost but will never forget in my heart. Oh.
Well, my goodness, that is just really something.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Janet, we always say be specific. So what do you mean by that's really something?
I can't even talk.
Well,
that was really something and different than I expected.
Oh, really?
Yes. It is such a beautiful story, and you just evoke every specific thing. I mean, there wasn't a word I didn't want to hear.
Thank you.
You know, I'm only sorry it's over.
Now,
thank you for that.
The title of our show is Love Letters Live. So, Janet, how is this a love letter? Because this is a poem, and I understand it, mm-hmm. it hung on the wall in your grandparents' home.
It did. I actually framed it for my grandparents. A couple years after I had written it, my grandmother said to me, you know, I want to be able to read that. I want to be able to see it every day. So I framed it, and
that's
she...
That's your answer. That's what makes it a love letter.
Yep. Uh-huh. She actually framed it, and she put it into the hallway of her front entry. So every time somebody comes in the house, it's one of the first things they see.
And they probably stop and read it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's moving on to my parents next. They've uh-huh. they've claimed their stake on it.
Well, yes, and I'd so like to, it's okay. history. Another thing we say about love
it's
letters
history.
Is that it's history.
It's everything that someone else gave you.
Right.
It is talking about someone else. I mean, you're saying there's a place far from my eyes to see. I mean, you're in it.
Right.
You have to be. But you're talking about what you got, and every stanza is something, some beautiful gift that they gave you.
And the other grandchildren, I'm guessing.
Yes.
That everyone,
absolutely.
All of your cousins and can relate to it, right?
They gave you history, they gave you beauty, they gave you tuna and iced tea. But you talk about, you evoke the scent and the flavor. You have brought these people into the studio here.
Thank you. That was my goal. I mean, they were amazing people.
Yep.
They
There's
were
a place where I have
people.
Been spoiled by Gramps and his candy bars. I can't think of a person I've ever met who looks less spoiled. So what does that really mean? You were indulged and loved.
I was, yes.
Yeah.
He would slip a $20 bill. He slipped $20 bills to all his grandchildren great-grandchildren and say, don't spend it all in one place.
Or does that mean in some sense you were kind of spoiled because you so expected all that you got
right.
from them. This is where you got it. This was your fountain of
everything.
Joy and
mm-hmm.
health and strength and, yes. So when you asked what makes this a love letter, mm-hmm. what were you thinking, Teresa?
No, I was just asking because I love to hear you answer that question.
I see. Oh, yes. This is just wonderful. And I can't even imagine the power of having read this as her eulogy.
Oh, well, my dad actually did her eulogy, and I did as a kind of a backup.
Okay, what part? I mean,
yeah,
it was basically
sort of the same thing, but it was really hard, you know. And thankfully, you know, the front couple pews were filled with, you know, people who were my cousins and my aunts and uncles and my parents. And my brother were there, and I kept looking at them because every time I'd start to choke up, I, you know, focus on something.
So
I kept it together. There was a time that I gulped kind of like today, but I did finish it and read it the whole way through. But I felt like it was something I first of all, I really wanted to do, but I felt that I needed to do it and almost in a closing and to honor their lives and what they meant to all of us.
It's also such a hello.
It is.
I mean, it's a hello and a goodbye at the same time.
Right.
Or the other way around.
Exactly.
It's a goodbye, and here you are.
Yep.
And it's when you read it, one of the things that struck me is that it was such a beautiful thing to say because it is the present.
Right.
And when you read it after she's gone, it is the past.
Right.
But then again,
it's still
it's
the
present.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's just a real beautiful piece of work.
Thank you very much.
And how often,
thank
Janet, I haven't counted them up, but we know a number of our guests on our program have written love letters that ended up being read at a memorial service.
Well, yes, and I encourage that myself, and mm-hmm. that's one of the things Teresa and I started with, which led to all of this, was writing the eulogies and sending them ahead as love letters.
Right.
Then put them away, you know, a million years later.
Or hang them on the wall.
That's even nice, too. Why should people have to wait till they're gone to know what you think of them?
Right. I absolutely
agree.
And
I love that you just kept this theme. You know, there is a place. There is a place. Every stanza starts with there is a place.
Right. And it's kind of that once upon a time thing.
Well, but there is a place, and the place was them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They were the place.
It really was them. They made they made my life what it is, and definitely were big contributors, and, you know, my...
Oh, how lucky that you all got each other.
Exactly. Exactly. So I am very lucky, and I'm very excited to have my parents moving back there.
So do you do any
there.
Other kind of writing like this?
I do a lot of... I've been writing poetry, you know, off and on since I was in middle school. It's something I've always enjoyed.
Okay.
So I enjoy writing poetry, but I also enjoy writing, you know, kind of some short stories and that sort of thing. So,
but you're so good at this.
I just enjoy writing in general. I was always a big reader. I think I got it from
so
that.
So do you do other... letters that we would call love letters, that is to say your truth puts a paper on love, and mail them to people?
I don't mail them. I usually give them to them. So, like, I wrote one for my dad, and I gave it to him for Father's Day 1 year.
Okay,
I wrote
one for my mom. What did you do when you gave it to him?
What did he do? I guess I was in high school when I gave it to him, so I must have still been around. I cried.
Oh, well, that's good.
But I basically handed it to him. And
did he take it somewhere else to read it?
No, he actually read it right in front of me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, and I'm pretty sure that my mom and dad still have those letters, because I wrote one to her as well and gave it to her for her birthday 1 year.
I would be 100% confident that they still have those letters.
I would think so. Yep. So, it's important for me. You know, our family is very close, and... we always know exactly what we're thinking of each other at any given moment, whether it's good or bad, you know.
It's wonderful.
And I think it's really important for all of us to continue to do that, because we do love each other, and we tell each other we love each other all the time.
But there's something different in having it in writing.
It is. It really is. You know, and I got a letter from my brother 1 year. He was very young, and he couldn't afford to buy Christmas presents because he was, a college student. and I still have that letter. It was something, you know, just, hey, thank you for everything that you've done, and I love you, and I know I was kind of a pain in the butt when I was a kid, but I still love you, you know, type thing. And it means a lot.
Well, okay, but you said something else. Teresa and I talk a lot, in particular now when the economy is so awful, that this is a gift that is in money pretty much cost-free.
Right.
That you can give your whole heart for almost no money, and
it's
it is
so much
a gift.
Better. Than
because
any
how do you need another scarf?
Than a piece of junk that's going to end up in someone's office.
That I'm going to make you get rid of.
And Melissa's going to make you get rid of it.
Exactly. That's right. And love letters are never clutter.
No, they're not.
No.
No, they're not. Because you can read them over and over again.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And will.
And still get that same feeling.
And you can buy the most beautiful boxes to keep them
exactly.
in. And they're small.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep, exactly.
Well, Melissa, you're such a genius, and I say that because you come on the show and you just...
say
everything
that
you're everything.
Supposed to say.
Okay, everything
thank you.
That Jen and I already say and write about and blog about. And
that's right. So it's one of these where I'm going to look at Teresa and say, we could retire now.
Well, I love what you guys are doing. I heard about it when Teresa told me about it a few months ago. I thought, oh, my God, I want to be involved in this.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if I was ready to read it yet by that time.
Oh,
but
you did
well.
Right. Well, you waited till you could. That's
I did.
Perfect.
I waited.
Yes.
Yep.
So I would just like to say that the more you do, and if you mail them to people, and on this pile of ick that is our mail these days, there is an envelope with your handwriting, some pretty envelope, and in it is something you've written. That's going to be just a bag of gold.
I think so, too.
With your handwriting.
Yep, I agree. Okay.
And the date.
And the date. Yep.
Okay.
I have the date on mine.
Okay. I know I'm talking to an organizer. I don't
have
to worry about it.
We have just a couple of minutes left, but I want to ask, Melissa, I want to ask you something professionally. So if you have a number of love letters that you want to keep forever, as an organizer, what would you recommend? What's the best thing to do with these?
So what I've been recommending to my family members, and something that I do, because there are a lot of letters that we found in my grandparents' house that we all want to keep, I suggest getting a really pretty box.
Yes, they sell
them. Either a Whittem box. You can go anywhere, Pier 1, Target, and get a really pretty box.
Or stationery stores.
Exactly.
Russian Hill Bookstore on Polk Street in San Francisco.
Get something that you really like and that makes you feel good, and that you can put some of those fun little treasures, even if it's, something else besides the letter, something that was maybe given to you.
Right.
But then at least you're honoring it. It's not getting tucked in the back of a closet and lost somewhere.
Yes, and when you're gone, someone will come in, your children or your grandchildren will come in and find maybe a whole stack of beautiful boxes.
Exactly.
And, yes, it'll open doors they never even knew about.
Exactly.
Well, I wish we could go on and on.
Me too.
Thank you, Melissa, for coming.
Thank you so much
come
for having me.
Come back if you'd like.
I would love to.
Join us again. This
if
was
you
delightful.
Have with another story and another piece that you've written?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Thank you.
But for now, we have to sign off because we're out of time once again. In the meantime, we always encourage you to put your loving thoughts and sentiments into words and send them while you still have the chance.
Which is what Melissa did. And if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion. And I wish this were TV so you could see Melissa's smile.
Maybe we'll take a photo.
Okay.
So until next week, with love from Teresa
and Janet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.